I am indeed very grateful to the World Council of Churches, especially to the General Secretary, for inviting me to participate in this hearing. Given the broken world in which we find ourselves, we truly need it. We truly need not only a year for reconciliation, but to commit ourselves constantly for reconciliation. Mr. Moderator, to tell an African preacher to do this presentation in 10 minutes is quite a challenge. Many of you know that for many African preachers, the first half hour of a sermon is only warm-up time. So rather than pretend I'm giving a comprehensive treatment of the theme, I've chosen to take us on a journey with three stops to simply catch a glimpse of some hopeful signs and opportunities that express faith-based contributions to healing and reconciliation. Two of these talks will give us brief glances at their contributions to healing and reconciliation in Africa. Our third stop goes beyond Africa to a challenge and opportunity for faith-based contributions to reconciliation, which cuts across all continents. So first stop, South Africa. We were told that there is a paper there which treats what happened there even more comprehensively. But for decades, churches and civil society joined forces with South Africans in fighting the evil of apartheid. In this evil system of government-sponsored oppression and repression on the basis of race, many South Africans suffered torture, unjust long-term imprisonment, and death. Even children were included. We just have to remember what happened in Soweto on June 16, 1976. Given the decades of living under such evil conditions, no sane person would have thought reconciliation was ever possible between the race that dominated and the race that was victimized. What was humanly conceivable was victims wishing for a time when they could bring perpetrators to justice and simply make sure that the perpetrators too suffered at least some of the pain they had caused. The intensity of the exclusion and pain that the apartheid system caused was such that it would have been easy to justify. After all, there are many good examples of how courts were set up after serious atrocities to bring perpetrators to justice. What happened in South Africa after 1994 is a refreshing departure from actions that perpetuate a cycle of violence and a major contribution to healing and reconciliation that can serve as a model for us today as we seek new ways of fostering healing and reconciliation in 2009 and beyond. The exemplary leadership of President Nelson Mandela, who himself suffered from 27 years of unjust imprisonment, constituted a remarkable step in leading the world in a different path, a path of reconciliation. Then the establishment of the Truth and Reconciliation Committee, chaired by the Nobel Peace Laureate, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, came to strengthen these. Through this process, an opportunity was offered for victims to be able to express the human rights violation they suffered and for perpetrators to own up to what they had done and, where applicable, apply for amnesty. This was not an easy process. Neither was it meant to let perpetrators off easily. It represented a spiritual journey that could look evil in the eye and go beyond it to healing and reconciliation. It certainly has its own flaws. Many open questions are still there, especially questions about the absence of many South African white perpetrators. However, my aim this afternoon is not to do a critical assessment of it. That is what Abrams has done in his paper. Mine is simply to point to it as a hopeful sign for healing and reconciliation, representing how, in the face of responding to an evil system and African community drew from the meaning they attached to humanity, Ubuntu, and other spiritual resources to put in place a process for healing and reconciliation. Second stop. From 1989 to 1996, Liberia experienced a very brutal civil war during which more than 200,000 civilians lost their lives. The violence and atrocities had many ethnic dimensions, leaving doubts that people could ever come back to live in the same communities again in ethnic diversity. How could people of Kran, Gio, Manu tribes, and Americo-Liberians ever find the courage to be reconciled to one another after those atrocities? The hostilities were so divisive. Ordinarily, these are the times when religious sentiments are most vulnerable for exploitation. Using religious sentiments, many politicians and opportunists with vested interests usually specialize in pitting us against one another. However, it was precisely within such troubling circumstances that the actions of some religious leaders became a critical symbol for reconciliation and hope. Christian and Muslim leaders refused to let their religious differences be another source adding to the suffering already experienced by Liberians. This gave birth to the Interreligious Council of Liberia. This council itself was a sign of reconciliation. Christians and Muslims working together for a particular purpose to help end the war and build communities of peace and reconciliation. In this case, the reconciliation actually began while the war was still on. It was a reconciled community that worked tirelessly alongside others to end the war. The Interreligious Council had the leadership of the then chairman of the National Muslim Council and Christian leaders, both Catholic and Protestant, a true expression of what ecumenical engagement can achieve. No wonder the Interreligious Council of Liberia won the Archbishop Desmond Tutu Peace Prize that was given by the All Africa Conference of Churches in 1997. Such a commitment to healing and reconciliation during the war placed the Interreligious Council in a good position to enter into the task of building reconciled communities after the war. And here again, I'm not doing a critical assessment of it, but simply offering an example of what could be a resource for 2009 and beyond. Our third stop. As we commemorate this year, 2009, as the International Year of Reconciliation, it is important for us to think beyond reconciliation within communities to the larger picture of the state of our world. Therefore, my third stop is to catch a glimpse of how the global economy today fragments communities and distorts our ability to be good stewards of God's creation. This calls for reconciliation among people as well as between human beings and God's creation. Africa has been at the receiving end of this form of fragmentation, but so are many communities in Asia, Latin America, the Caribbean, Eastern Europe, the Middle East, and other parts of the world. Many people in Western Europe and North America also suffer from this. So long as overt and covert greed undergirds an economic system which impoverishes many people in the world and manifests a blatant disregard for being good stewards of the earth and its resources, humanity, wittingly or unwittingly, is building up fragmented societies. The current global economic crisis has brought this to the forefront. The challenge is, how do we reconcile societies? For example, when that global system is tested, it is immigrants and minorities in the affluent communities that become the targets of hatred and exclusion. When this leads to different forms of analysis, even within the Christian community, we tend to allow these differences to divide us along lines which make reconciliation a challenge. So rather than operate together as Christians to address the evils that lead to injustice and suffering for immigrants and suffering due to how we treat the environment, we begin to see one another in terms of right or left, conservative or liberal. This is indeed not the time for lamentation. I see this era as an opportunity to find new handles on addressing the challenge. How can we put our hands together and address these issues of the economy and environment before they destroy us? Many indigenous spiritualities have taught us that there ought to be harmony between humanity and the environment. This reminds us of the creation story in Genesis, in which humanity is charged with being good stewards of creation. This we have failed miserably in and need to take up. Here I see hope in some critical work that is going on. The Agape process of the WCC is a pointer towards building communities committed to healing and reconciliation. The Covenanting for Justice in the Economy and the Earth initiative of my own organization, WARC, and the resultant Accra Confession, and what we together with the WCC and the Council for World Mission are doing in the Oikotree movement continue to move us along in this direction. Reconciliation is at the heart of our faith as Christians. The signs of hope are visible. The work is challenging. The opportunities are here with us. The question is, to be instruments of healing and reconciliation, will we be able to walk the walk that our faith demands? Thank you.